another edition of the Columbia University Sports Podcast Basketball Edition, the first of 2017. I'm Joe Favorito along with Tom Richardson.
Happy New Year, Joe. It's good to be back and looking forward to continuing this basketball thing, which has been really fun, and there's a lot to talk about it. So why don't you set up today's show?
And speaking of basketball things, one of the great things on campus at Columbia and in the New York area has been the Columbia women's basketball team. Megan Griffith joined us at the beginning of our podcast season with Jim Engel talking about what her expectation was going to be for the first season. And as we get through the first part of the season, which is the non-Ivy League season, the Ivy League season, if you're listening to this, begins on Saturday night. This will air on Friday. We're back to talk about kind of how we got here, Megan. So congratulations, first of all, to get to this point.
Thank you very much.
So how did we get here?
Buying into the process. It's been taking everything one day at
Summering
a time.
Summering your haters, Philadelphia 76ers to get us started.
Right. So.
Yeah.
Sam Hinkie, if you're listening, there you go.
Hashtag buying into the process. Yeah. Let's try that.
Yeah, it's been fun. You know, I have a group that was really hungry to be coached, and that's a great start for any team in any season. And it's special because, one, I went here, and two, there's a lot of kind of community that's been built around the team. And so we feel a really strong sense of support from the people outside of us, which I always think helps in your team moving forward and progressing through a season.
So you talk about the process, buying into the process. You have a upperclassman-laden team. We've had several of the upperclassmen on and talked about what it was like to buy into the process. What have been some of the surprises as we sit here today? The team is 10-3, the best start prior to the Ivy League season in Columbia women's basketball history. What did you have to go through? What did you have to convince them of to be part of what it is now with this great start?
We talk a lot about the non-negotiables and the values of our program, and that's one thing that I think they've really understood how important it is to be successful. And, you know, there's that area where you can hover over mediocrity or you can be really good and be solid. And so for us, paying attention to those small, very important details every day and building your core and what I like to also call our court values has been really paramount for us.
So what are some of the non-negotiables?
You know, in terms of, and they're non-negotiables and sometimes intangible, we talk about having our Columbia Edge, and for us that stands for energy, discipline, grit, and excellence.
Can I ask who came up with that?
That was me.
Wow. Okay, I love the acronym.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, I'll take credit for that one.
and when they buy into it, is it something that being student-athletes, young student-athletes, they kind of roll their eyes or they say, yes, we're into this and we're going to keep doing what we're doing?
As student athletes, and especially here in Ivy League schools, I think the right thing for them to do is being like, yes, and try to go forward with it. But now it's not just saying yes and acknowledging it, but also like making it part of your everyday. And so it also becomes habitual, which is something that I don't think is easy for them. And if you don't have, if you're not disciplined as a person, it's really hard to get disciplined all of a sudden in some of your daily routines. Mm-hmm. So for us, we've been constantly battling and fighting to maintain, you know, these four things as being pillars for our program.
So, Megan, is this something that is just pervades the program now, or do you need to keep reminding them of some of these core values and sensibilities week to week or day to day?
Constant reminders.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, something that we have to build into, you know, our thought of the day for every practice, a theme into some activity we're doing, you know, drilling it in our defensive side of things and talking about discipline and grit. So we try to incorporate everything we do.
Let's talk about the leaders. Who has really emerged? Who surprised you as a leader, not just on the court, but on the academic side and overall on campus? What's been your biggest surprise amongst the players?
So we nominated captains. Team, they selected on their own, and they selected Ara Talkov, who's a senior, and then Camille Zimmerman, who we've all heard a lot about throughout the season so far, who's, I would say, Camille's taken the reins a little bit more on the court side. She's still working on that in terms of being a voice, being a presence, bringing other people along. So I think that's an area where our staff is taking a large responsibility in that regard because it's new. It's a new philosophy. It's a new style. There's new drills. But, you know, Camille's done a good job in that part. And then off the court, Ara Talkov has been fantastic at just making sure the team stays together and finishes things on time and gets back to the coaching staff and organizes them. So she's been a true joy to really see blossom into that role, which I knew she had in her, but it requires a lot more from them. You know, being captains, they have to meet with me weekly. Mm-hmm. And so we talk all the time. You know, I'm texting them every day.
How much of that conversation is about on-court issues and activities as opposed to attitude and kind of intangibles?
The conversations about on-the-court stuff I like to have in front of the entire team, because I think it's important for them all to hear the same message, and it's not necessarily directed at one person all the time. You know, if it is, even if it is, they need to hear me call them out, and they need to call each other out. That's something big I've been harping on, which hopefully we'll get better at. But off the court, that's a little bit more of the behind the scenes, bring the captains together, have them try to kind of impose themselves in the team first.
What have been some of the bigger surprises when you look back after winning a close game, like you've won several close games, you know, going out west and being pretty successful? When you look back now and say, I'm the head coach of this team, I can't believe we're doing these things, what are some of the surprises, both positively, and then what are the challenges going forward now that you still have to correct, you know, at this point in the season?
Surprises, we rank third nationally in rebounding margin. I don't know if I would have told you guys that to begin the season.
So could you define that?
Yeah, rebounding margin is the difference between ours and the opponent's team. Okay. So we're plus 14 plus rebounds right now on the season. So every game we go out and out rebound a team by 14 or more.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Which has been
amazing. And that counts
amazing.
Division
yeah.
1, 2, 3?
Just in one right now. Right. Yeah, just in one.
But that means you're missing a lot of shots, which leads which means that there's a lot of good defense.
Exactly, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So there's, you know, it's...
That's my glass half full, by the way.
Well, in plus, both is that, that includes offensive
offense
and defense.
And defensive.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's, and that's the thing too, is that we know, I told them every day, assume misses. And I think that they bought into that mindset of, okay, we're going to the glass. So we send three people to the glass. You know, we've had a Josie Little performance of, you know, I think it was 18 or 19 rebounds a game. Camille's had multiple 17 rebound games. Torrey's right up there as well. So it's been fun to see them
really
hammer
teams. That's interesting to me. As someone who watches a lot of NBA, I feel like it's the opposite attitude in pro basketball, which is assume baskets. And you don't see, in my opinion, a lot of hustle on the rebounding, particularly offensive rebounding for the team with the ball.
Yeah,
and it feels like in college basketball, it's more competitive in the rebounding sphere.
Well, one, I think, too, that's because of how much these NBA guys grind. So for them to be like every play, give everything you have, I'm sure that there's possessions off here and there. And then, two, the offensive players that are really good are really good.
Yeah. So higher percentage shooters
and you know they're hitting tougher shots and they practice those shots. Here it's a little bit different. It's way more about how five people can be successful.
Right, so that's actually another interesting question I hadn't thought about. Like, what is your shooting percentage as a successful 10-3 team? Is it that much higher than, let's say, a team that's mediocre or poor?
Our shooting percentage is okay. It's not great. We're not shooting as well as I'd like to be shooting from beyond the arc. Inside the arc, you know, I think we're 41%. So it's, you know, it's okay. It's just okay. But the good thing about that is that we're creating second chances for our team. And that's another part of it, is that if we're not going to make our first shot, we have to be able to create second chances, opportunities here.
You know, Tom, one of the great stats that people never realize is free throw percentage defense.
But, okay.
So, but anyway, we won't get into that. Everybody, that goes over everybody's heads when you say it, but it's kind of important.
No, it's true. It's true. We do shoot well from the line, though.
Yeah.
We're very good.
So again, but when you look at your personal performance as a head coach at this point, from a leadership standpoint, from a learning standpoint, what have you learned about yourself being a head coach? And then what have you been able to project amongst your staff to have them buy into the program as well, because that's probably just as important as it is the players.
Mm-hmm. Learning every day, I'm trying to be like having teaching moments for myself. Mm-hmm. And I really do believe that with whatever environment you are, you can treat every moment as a teaching moment. For me, it's talking to people that are tenured here, talking to people that have had the experience, have won here. You know, and we've touched on some of that in terms of, you know, Michael from fencing, Brett from baseball, Al obviously had great success at Penn, things like that, where I just have to connect with these people that really understand what it means to win and how to create that culture of doing so.
So to touch on that a little bit, so when you talk to Al Bagnoli about winning, mm-hmm. What are those conversations like? I mean, not that you have to get into great detail, but I find that pretty interesting, because having been around other colleges or other things, a lot of people like to operate in silos. So is this different from other places you've been, where it's more across the board? where people will come in? And what's it like I said, with somebody like Al Bagnoli to have that conversation?
Mm-hmm. I think it's both. I've seen both, for sure. I've seen people saying, this is our program, we do it this way, nobody else, you know, stay on the outside. And I've also seen the very inclusive nature of, welcome to our program, this is, let's share ideas, let's work together and make each other better. You know, we're mm-hmm. all one family at the end of the day, mm-hmm. Columbia basketball, Columbia fencing, Columbia football. So, you know, with Al in particular, you know, like the first time I got here, within a week of my hire, I reached out to him and I was just like, can I sit down with you? And
that's
so
great.
I went up to his office, he bought me lunch, we sat down, we talked, we spitballed, asked him the hard questions, the things he went through and how he overcame them, and why he took this job, and, you know, what his hopes were for his building process. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a lot of dialogue and back and forth. And anytime you're just honest and real and authentic with somebody, you gain something from the conversation. Mm-hmm. So I feel like Al and I have built a relationship and where I could reach out to him if I needed him.
Have you turned him into a basketball fan?
I hope so. He emails me after good wins, okay. And we stay close, and we do enough of alumni relation things together too that I get to see him.
And you know, the other thing, you touch a little bit about baseball, but I was surprised when we talked to your players and we asked them about other programs. We talked a little bit about the men's program, but they really talked about the success of the baseball program and how that's rubbed off on women's basketball. How does that happen? I mean, again, as we sit here in the Lou Gehrig room, out just on the outside of the gym.
Right. With, by the way, we should quickly mention our latest addition to the sound effects library we have.
Oh, right.
Which
the
is
sound.
The ambient sound outside, of right. Squeaky sneakers and whistles,
exactly.
Some of you might have heard.
Tom and I keep squeaking our feet on the floor.
It's a nice change from sirens and garbage trucks that we usually have.
But baseball and football especially are kind of off on their own world.
Mm-hmm.
What have you learned? Have you learned anything from the success of the baseball program here as well?
Completely. And I think a big part of why our girls speak about it is because, like, at the end of the day, people like to be around winners, right? So you're going to gravitate to that naturally if you're a competitor. If you're not, maybe you won't and you don't care. But for me, we talk about competing every day. So, you know, obviously Brett's won 3 Ivy League championships in a row, and that's no secret to anybody. So naturally, you're going to want to gravitate and learn from that. And so for us, I think there's always been a bond within the student-athlete community here. We get to kind of pick and choose who you're going to be closest with. And I'm sure our girls, for that reason, have been like, okay, guys, like, what's up? Like, why? What's going on here? So mm-hmm. they've tried to learn about success from those guys. And so I really credit them for that.
And speaking of success, obviously, on this campus, there are many, many successful people, whether they are faculty, alumni, staff, teachers,
and
deans,
students.
students, excuse me, students,
Maurice.
Of course. As Maurice is sitting to my right. Semi-successful, but it's okay. Have you kind of gleaned anything from any professors on campus yet, kind of walking around, given the fact that you went here?
Yeah, definitely. There's quite a few of them that are still here. One in particular is Sunil Galati, who we all know that
we are
name.
Giving shout-outs to every sport we could think of on this show.
Yes,
so go ahead.
U.S. Soccer Federation. He obviously has ties to a lot of sports and professional sports at that. But, I mean, he taught me multiple classes when I was here in my mm-hmm. econ major. And to have him around, and he works out in the fitness center every day. He stops by my office. I met his
really?
Wife and his children. His mm-hmm. son's a freshman here.
His daughter's a very accomplished soccer team. Player.
I noticed that, yeah. And she's tall.
Yes.
I'm like,
in
all right.
So
no, high school.
No, she's
okay.
young. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And so to have him around, and like for me, that's the one connection that I think is really important.
So again, like Al Bagnoli, what's the conversation like with Sunil Galati?
He wants to know. He's like, all right, so are you going to win? Like, he's very straightforward and frank. And then he'll be like, okay, well, like, how's it really going? And so he'll ask me, because he does care. I was a student, you know, and that's a relationship that, of course, he's had a lot of students. But for me to be back now and giving back to this place like he is, I think it's powerful. And he cares about my well-being and the well-being of our student-athletes.
That's amazing. Yeah. It really is amazing, because you don't hear that. I don't know if those conversations are going on in Tuscaloosa today, as we're one day, less than 24 hours removed from Clemson winning the national championship against Alabama. And how do you think winning affects that at all with being on campus? Like, do people notice? Do the women on your team go around and say, oh, my teacher said something to me in class, or someone who I've never thought of, you know, likes nanotechnology, asked me about women's basketball today. Have you seen that yet?
I think our girls have seen that. They have said people recognize them. Also, a big part of that is cluing them into what you're doing on campus. And so from day one, we have our girls meet the professors and be like, I'm missing this class, or I have a game this day. So that now they know women's basketball is in their classroom. And so there's a more of a personal investment there, especially in your smaller size classes. Mm-hmm. But for me in particular, in my personal experience, I know that when after a win, like we beat Providence, right? And it was a Big East opponent, our first win against the Big East opponent ever in program history. And like literally every day, the next person, like any day person I saw that next day was like, great win, coach. Love what you're doing. Got a bunch of emails, bunch of text messages. That's and terrific. I know our girls also got similar responses too.
That's great. So we have the Ivy season coming up.
Let's turn the page. So
now we have to go beyond a successful fall and early winter and or you and think about what you're facing.
Tom's
boy,
as you can see, he's no wings.
It lasts about, what, 5 weeks or so before?
Yeah,
roughly?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how are you getting them ready for this? Because I know this is when the intensity gets dialed up.
Mm-hmm. It's paying attention.
And the physical schedule changes too, right?
Totally. We play the back-to-backs.
Yeah, the back-to-backs.
So we open up with Cornell back-to-back weekends, and we play Saturday, and then we don't play until 7 days later, and we play the next Saturday, and then it starts the back-to-back round-robin play. So for these first ones, you can't look too far ahead, honestly. And now that we have the Ivy League tournament, like we talked about before, there is a little bit more room for error, but that doesn't mean you look past any games. So, you know, scouting is huge, I think, at this point. And you really, and I even talked to our girls about this today, it's we have to pay attention. There's a reason we watch all of this game film, and it's not so we can just roll out the ball and be like, have fun, but so that we can really execute a game plan.
Right.
So, you know, the scouting will ramp up for sure. The intensity in terms of knowing your matchup, knowing how teams can hurt you, it's, you know, we have a lot of time to prepare.
So talk about the process of scouting, mm-hmm. using some of the video and the technology. I know that the Key Motion is being used by the guys' team. Are you using the same software?
Are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, could you talk about that for a second?
Yeah, and so that just relates to our gym in particular.
Right.
So we have a camera system built in that's actually films. We can watch it live, too. So if we're on the court and we wanted to watch something that we're doing currently, we're able to you know, look at that while we're in practice,
okay.
Because there's a live stream, and then you know, post practice is easy really to get and for us to access. So that for me, I do a lot of that, just kind of the team stuff. And then when we're talking about opponents, you know, we sign our assistants to different scouts, and they get to handle those,
okay.
And then they work with me very closely.
So in the case of, let's say, preparing for Cornell this weekend,
mm-hmm.
someone is checking out all this film from Cornell,
mm-hmm.
reporting back to you.
Exactly.
You're synthesizing everything and then trying to turn that into a game plan.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So we both kind of come together and meeting of the minds, yeah.
There's always this kind of philosophy, I think, around teams about whether you're the hunter or the hunted. You guys have had an amazing run to get to this point. You now start the Ivy League season at 0-0, even with the tournament at the end. Do you feel like you guys are now the hunters or the hunted at this point, now that you're on everybody's radar?
Definitely hunters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were picked to finish last in the league,
right.
Which I have no problem talking about. And
By whom?
The actual committee of the league.
Okay.
Yeah, so when the preseason polls came out, we were picked last to finish
okay.
last. And then I don't think people – I think people will take us a little bit more seriously, but they won one – our program won one game last year in Ivy League play. So to see our good start doesn't necessarily translate as it did last year to, you know, winning season in Ivies, but how can we band together? How can we continue to make progress and not let our mental toughness – or and be strong mentally, you know, have mental toughness? So for me, it's getting our team in the right state of mind to approach this season. So with me, I'd like to be the aggressive hunters and not the, you know, oh, we're doing okay, and people now see that.
And to apply the Columbia edge.
Exactly.
Right. All those lions running around. A couple things before we let you go. One is, what's been like after exams have ended? You're around now, the students are around more. You guys had a trip to California, which we're going to talk about in a subsequent podcast. How's the conditioning? How's the mental training? How does that all kind of play into now leading into really the Ivy League season? Did it change from when exams ended, or is it just as intense?
Exams are a tough time for this crew in particular, or any Ivy League team that's practicing and training, and because they have a lot going on and they're trying to cram and they want to practice too. So we practice really hard throughout that time, but we managed the time of that and shrunk our times, you know, and now we're back to more full practices again. And especially prepping for this week where we've had now 10 days off, we have to make sure we go hard and go hard enough and then also dial it back and get their legs fresh and ready for Saturday. So my favorite part as a student athlete and as a coach during this time is that they don't class. So you can really, like, it's all basketball right now.
Yeah.
It's all basketball. Like, that's, you know, one of the reasons we're all here. And they do, yeah. Like, they're in the gym more because they can be and they don't have class. And, you know, we have the time and the space for them to use it. You know, and to me, too, like, if it's important to them and they want to make noise in our conference, they need to put the time in.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're understanding that, which is really good to see.
Like we said before we let you go, and we've talked a little bit about the Ivy League season, when we opened the podcast at the beginning of the year, you threw out a couple of little pearls
of
wisdom.
At
the beginning of the season, what did I say, the year?
Yeah.
The beginning of the season. The academic year. How's that?
Sure.
You threw out a couple of pearls of wisdom. One was how much you follow John Wooden, mm-hmm. and how that translates into your work ethic and what you do on the court. And then the other thing you threw out there, which we didn't really jump on then, but I'd like to talk about for a couple of minutes, is you said you worked in the finance world.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get from the finance world back to here, and what was that like to come back, and do you miss it at all?
Great question. I don't think I do. I think at times I did earlier
in my
career.
Where were you working, just so everybody knows?
I was working at Delaware Investments. It was a financial firm, part of the Lincoln Financial Group in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And so that company, I think, has changed hands now, but obviously Lincoln Financial Group is still there. But I was working throughout college in my summers and interning, and I got offered a position to be a financial analyst, and then I also got a contract to play overseas. So I went overseas and ended up doing that for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I came back, instead of going right into finance, I ended up getting a position in coaching. So for me, once I started it, I was like, oh, I could always go back and kind of dabble and reconnect with people. And then once I started doing this, I knew that I wanted to pursue it. And then, once I was in the running for the job and got it, I really shifted focus. So
and there's no looking back at this point.
I have not looked back.
And Coach Wooden, touch on the values and how that kind of plays into everything that you do on and off the court.
I think it's important to be mentally sound and healthy and to be able to think the game, but also think about why it translates to life. And that's something I think John Wooden was fantastic at doing with his players, and just his sayings and catchphrases and things that you read about him. He was a player's coach in a way that he cared about them as people, and obviously basketball players, but that's how he built his dynasty. And what he did at UCLA was really amazing. So for me, it's way more than the basketball, but also making that really important and helping them understand why.
Great stuff, Megan. Thank you. So we have the big game coming up Saturday.
Mm-hmm. He's back to we again. Did you just notice that?
You have the big game coming up. Some of us will be watching. And it is at home, the Upper West Side of Manhattan on the campus.
We're away on Saturday.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it's away this Saturday. Yeah. And then a week from Saturday it's home. So my bad.
And that date is?
So that's going to be the 21st. Yeah. So the 21st is the next home game. So we'd love to get a big turnout for that, I'm
mm-hmm.
sure. How can everybody come see you?
Well, one, you can always walk right up to campus, walk into the main gates of Dodge Fitness Center. We play on Levy and Gymnasium floor. You can just buy tickets right here in person. We'd love to have people come out. And then also you can visit our website at gocolumbialions.com/tickets.
Nice.
So two good ways.
And obviously follow on Twitter as well.
Yes.
So everything that's
yes.
going on.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thanks again. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
This has been another edition of the Columbia University Sports Podcast, Basketball Edition. I'm Joe Favorito. Tom? Another informational session.
That was fun. Thanks again, Megan. And we wish you well for the Ivory part of the season. And we'll see you on the court as spectators, and wish you the best.
Thank you very much, Joe and Tom.
Take care. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Cusp Show, the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson, and my co-host is Joe Favorito. And our production assistant this week is Columbia student Maurice Eisenman. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple's podcast app, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and other key platforms. You can also find it at blogtalkradio.com/The Cusp Show. And you can get in touch with us on Twitter at CU_SPS_sports. Also, you can find out more about our program, the Columbia University Sports Management Program, by going online at sps.columbia.edu/sports-management. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.